Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for the second week in September. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and today I'll be talking with Betsy Carlson. Betsy is the Citizen Science Coordinator at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. And our subject today is the Gray Whale Project at the Marine Science Center. So welcome, Betsy. It's fun to have you here.
Hi.
First, as is our tradition, before we talk with Betsy, let's hear this week's mystery sound. And a little hint. I was working in my yard when I heard this sound, and I needed to stop and to look around a bit to figure out what it was. I'll share its identity with you just a little bit later in the program. Of course, it's definitely fall now. I know I keep trying to think it's summer, but it's not. It's fall. And those low tide expeditions that we so enjoyed this summer will need to wait until next spring when the best low tides will again occur during the daylight hours. Last week, Wendy Feltham, Dan Post, and I took advantage of one of the last good low tides to explore North Beach. We spotted about a dozen healthy blood stars, a vast array of seaweeds and kelp, and hundreds of aggregating green anemones, and a vast number of those tiny green strawberry anemones dotting the boulders out there. Well, Dan is actually a native plant guy, and he was exploring the intertidal for the first time. I was afraid we might have kind of overwhelmed him a bit, but he made a comment. He was impressed by the immense diversity and the density of life in the intertidal. He remarked that with wildflowers, at least you get to walk a bit between sightings. So staying in things marine, last August, I read the following entry by Betsy Carlson on the Port Townsend Marine Science Center blog. It said, "Last week we raised the dead, guiding a seine net full of gray whale bones to the shore with the help of a pile of barrels, hardy swimmers, some borrowed boats, and a gaggle of great volunteers." So, of course, I had to follow up with that. And let me reintroduce Betsy Carlson. She's the, as I said, the Citizen Science Coordinator out at the Marine Science Center. Betsy, can you, before we go into the gray whales, kind of briefly tell us what citizen science means to you?
I would be really happy to do that. Citizen science is pretty much a volunteer opportunity to get engaged and involved with science. And what it takes to be a citizen scientist is enthusiasm and a passion for learning and an attention to detail.
So now let's go back to that pile of gray whale bones. Can you just tell me the just sort of basic story of how that gray whale came to the Marine Science Center?
The gray whale is a marine mammal, and marine mammals are federally protected. Mm-hmm. And so it had been watched by NOAA, and it originally was in Elliott Bay.
Down by Seattle.
By Seattle. They found it. It was not doing very well, and eventually it died. This was the end of April. They lost the carcass, couldn't find it, and it turned up in the beginning of May. They found it again. They were trying to find a place to tow it and ended up towing it to Indian Island Naval Base. Because of our involvement with the Marine Mammal Stranding Network, we are the local Marine Mammal Stranding Network responders, the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. We were contacted to see if we were interested in participating in the necropsy and if we'd be interested in the skeleton of the whale for display.
Much like Hope, the orca.
Exactly, like Hope.
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know how the whale died?
The necropsy, which is an animal autopsy, the necropsy was done by the Cascade Research Cooperative. And they came up and they cut open the side of the whale. I was there. And they looked at the tissues and they looked at the structure of the inside of the whale and found that it had a collapsed lung. So it was a pneumothorax or collapsed lung. the cause of that is not apparent. Hmm. The back of the whale was not, there was no sign of injury, but the inside of the whale just, it sort of from the waterline up, was complete jello. Hmm. So it had a collapsed lung and a lot of necrotic tissue, mm-hmm. squishy tissue is the best
So
way.
Was it an adult, juvenile, an old folk?
It was a young female gray
young
whale.
Young female, mm-hmm. okay.
It was 29 feet long.
And full grown, they are
They
what?
Get up into, females are slightly smaller than males. They get up to 30 to 40 feet.
A good size, but not quite yet full grown.
Exactly.
Do we see many gray whales in the Salish Sea?
Gray whales are known to come in here. There's actually a resident group that comes in regularly each spring into the Whidbey Island area. Mm-hmm. And you can actually see, if you look at Google Earth, you can see whale tracks on the beach. They are bottom feeders, uh-huh. and they leave these big bathtub-sized circular divots all along the coastline.
Oh, interesting. To have a look at that.
Yeah.
This gray whale kind of landed in your laps, metaphorically, I guess. How did you figure out what to do with it?
My background's in botany.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden we had the director decided that, yes, we do want this gray whale skeleton. And we had about a week to figure out how to get it from being a carcass on the beach of Indian Island. It was happening right about the time when they were having a big cascade event.
Oh, the training there.
So 600 plus people were about to arrive on the island, and they had a dead, smelly whale carcass on their beach, and they really didn't want it there for much longer. And so we scrambled as best we could, and we just figured out we'd wrap it up like a burrito in a net and sink it offshore. And it just was an amazing collection of people stepping forward with volunteering to donate nets and to donate anchors, to donate other equipment. And help us out.
So you literally wrapped it up.
We literally wrapped it up.
In nets?
Mm-hmm. So this is a 12,000 to 15,000-pound carcass of a whale. And we had to wrap a net all the way around it.
How did you do that? you must have had something out there to help move.
We did get a little help with some equipment to lift it up, but the plan mm-hmm. was that we were going to try and leverage it and roll it onto the net, mm-hmm. but because we were able to use some heavy equipment, basically a forklift, that mm-hmm. that we were able to pick it up slowly, slide the net under, put it down, pick up the middle, slide the net under, put it down, pick up the tail, slide the rest of it, and then we just wrapped it up like a burrito and tied it tight.
And hauled it offshore and sunk it.
Hauled it offshore and sunk it, put some anchors onto it, put floats on it to indicate where it was,
right.
And crossed our fingers because we had never done anything like this before.
So I do know because Betsy showed me a picture of the flipper that you didn't wrap the flipper in your burrito. And why
right.
was that?
Thank you. So we took off the two pectoral fins. The reason we did that, and so that's from like the shoulder blade or the scapula to the very end of the flipper or fin, yeah. pec fin. We took those off because those bones are so small and they would have fallen through the net and we would have lost them.
So the analogy is like all the tiny bones we have in our hands and in our yep. fingers and wrists.
Yeah. CT scan, which the Jefferson General Hospital graciously let us bring our frozen whale flipper into the hospital and do a CT scan of it, which is going to help tremendously when it comes to rearticulating the skeleton.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And I just wanted to say one thing. We as an organization have taken care of a gray whale before, a carcass that was washed up off of Middle Point. I believe that's where it was. And so we've done this before, but none of the people present have actually had that opportunity to do it again. So
it seems to me, and this is based on nothing other than just a reaction, that it decomposed really quickly. How long did it actually take to decompose?
It did go quick. It was summertime, and it took about 2.5 months for the bones to be pretty clean. I mean, we were able to rinse off the last little bits, mm-hmm. but took it 2.5 months. We were in communication with somebody who's working up in Alaska, and they have sunk some of their whales And it's taken a year or so underwater. However, around here, because we have such a rich micro populations or microfauna and micro in the water, just went that much faster. Mm-hmm. That many more things living in there to decompose the tissue from the bones.
So what kind of organisms helped in that decomposition?
Crabs. I mean, they're sort of the mechanical, and there are different kinds of worms that come in. And we had to be careful because it was a balance between losing the flesh from the bones, and actually there are organisms in the water that will eat the bones themselves.
Okay, so you can't leave it in the water.
You can't leave it in too long. Yeah, so every couple of weeks we would swim out there. We have this amazing guy who puts on his flippers and holds his breath for a super long time. And
holds his nose at the same time, I suppose. Yeah.
He's amazing. And he and our AmeriCorps member went out and did a lot of sub-camera work with the GoPro. And so we just took these underwater GoPros and filmed it. That's how I was able to see the process.
So I know you've now brought the whale burrito as an amazingly descriptive term, and you can go, oh yeah, I understand what you did.
Yeah.
You've brought it back up. The decomposition is done, and now what?
So it's now been brought up onto shore, and we rinsed off barnacles that had already established themselves on a bunch of the bones. We cleaned that up. We placed it in the back of a friend of ours' house who has a plastic greenhouse that she wasn't using, and so she's let us store the bones there. They're drying because there's still oils and things in the bones that need to come out. We still need to do another scrub of the bones. I was waiting for the weather to cool down a little bit before, because it was 110 degrees in that greenhouse. And the skull is in another friend's front yard, and that has more work to do to get the rest of the tissue off of it. We planted the flipper. We planted it in a compost pile. Some of the bones went to people's houses to finish the process that had any extra flesh through composting with horse manure. So we have two different places where those are composting now. Eventually, all the bones will come back together. We'll clean them up. We'll have a big whale articulation event probably at the Marine Science Center where people can get involved and help with
that's sort of the next question. So how do people get involved? Because I hear the story of Hope, and that all happened before I came to Port Townsend. Yeah. But I thought, how interesting to figure out how all those bones go together again.
It is. It's a big puzzle. And, well, we still need to finish cleaning, so there's an opportunity to do some bone cleaning and scrubbing. And there's some very precious opportunities with people with don't mind things that smell too funky to help clean out the skull. So we need to get in there. And then eventually we'll be bringing it into the Marine Science Center at some point, and that's when we'll do the labeling and that kind of thing, and then we'll be articulating it. I'm not sure when that's going to happen yet. So the Marine Science Center, our blog and our website will have information about it.
Great. I'm seeing just this amazing role for learning this sort of whole putting the skeleton back together process. Once it's together, what's the role that you hope this animal will play in your education program?
Well, as Hope is the orca that was on Dungeness, found on Dungeness Spit, had one of the highest levels of PCBs and toxins in it. We have not gotten any results back yet from the gray whale, so we're not sure what the toxin load in that whale will be. But as we talk about the life in the Salish Sea and Salish Sea conservation of the Salish Sea, which is our mission, we'll be using the whale as an opportunity just to get people excited and interested in the marine ecosystems. I mean, those gray whales are some of the farthest swimmers in the world. They go from Baja, where they birth their young, all the way up to the Arctic, and they are amazing animals.
I should suggest listeners to go on the Marine Science Center website. There's a blog link on there.
And we'll be updating information about the gray whale as we move forward. We still are cleaning, and there's still that opportunity. We have
And so people could contact you?
Yes, they can contact me if they're interested in learning more about the gray whale and getting involved, or go online and sign up as a volunteer and work with Gabrielle Sanchez, who is currently our interim volunteer coordinator.
Well, I think we could chat quite a bit longer. And actually, Betsy brought in show and tell. She brought in there's a barnacle that grows only on the skin of gray whales. And sometimes if you're on a whale watching boat or something, you can see the barnacles. But Betsy brought one in to look at today, look at close up. And it's fascinating. It's just fascinating. She also brought in some whale skin, which is like, really? Okay.
But I don't see that very often.
No, not at all. We do need to go on to do the rest of our program today. Let's hear that mystery sound again. Well, that was a seat call of the common chestnut-backed chickadee. This handsome bird, we all know, it's usually associated with its chickadee-dee-dee call. It visits our bird feeders. It forages about in the conifer forests. It feeds on insects and spiders and seeds. But that call we just heard, a seat call, it's a type of an alarm call. It especially is a warning of an approaching predator, usually from the air, like a hawk or an owl. And there's a scientist who was at the University of Washington who studied the chickadee's alarm call and found that it carries a surprising amount of information. It not only warns other chickadees that a predator is around, but it can transmit information on the degree of threat, how fast it's moving, what kind of predator it is. And some of the calls are just simply not audible to the human ear. They're just way too high. When a chickadee sees flying raptors, such as hawks, owls, and falcons, they produce that soft, high-pitched seet, seet, seet call that does not sound like chickadee-dee-dee, which is what stopped me in my yard. I think probably the next time I hear that, I'm going to really look around and see if I can see what the raptor is. So, upcoming events.
On Saturday, September 17th, the Port Townsend Marine Science Center is serving as the area coordinator for the International Coastal Cleanup. You can go to Washington Coast Savers for more information and how to register. The program will start at 12 noon at the Port Townsend Food Co-op, where you can sign up for your beach and go out and clean up the marine debris. And thanks for helping out.
Great. That's a useful thing to do. Well, of course, we have the full moon coming up this week, sometimes called the harvest moon or the corn moon, and it will occur on Friday, September the 16th. And on that night, you can go up to Hurricane Ridge to learn constellations from astronomer John Gore. Meet at the Hurricane Hill Trailhead. And just as the sun sets and the full moon rises, hike at your own pace up the partially paved trail, and you get to the summit, and John will point out constellations at the top. If it's cloudy, you probably want to call the Olympic National Park information line to see if the program's going to be canceled or not.
On Saturday, September 17th, the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society is sponsoring a field trip to learn, identify, and better understand the behaviors of the shorebirds of Dungeness Bay. Details can be found on the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society website.
And on Tuesday, September 20th, join a volunteer work party at the Jefferson Land Trust's Upper Snow Creek Forest Preserve. They'll be helping to finish getting rid of an ivy patch that is threatening to engulf the native trees. Check the Jefferson Land Trust website for details. So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. Thank you so much, Betsy. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, ideas, or even if you think you might be interested in joining our fun team of Nature Now hosts. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ, Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is the Gray Whale Song, performed by Ann Carroll.